He's a phenomenal football player. He can really throw it. He can spin it. He can run around. I mean, he's quick as a cat. He's just moving around like crazy. We're going to get to play against each other for many years, and it's going to always be a lot of battles. So, you know, I'm proud to see just his work ethic and success and doing for the shorter guys.
That was 5'11" MVP candidate Russell Wilson talking about the younger and even shorter quarterback who's threatening to outdo him within his own division, Kyler Murray. Today, ESPN's Arizona Cardinals reporter Josh Weinfuss tells us how Murray has defenses struggling to adapt to one of the game's most unique talents, and how his head coach is trying to grow a champion out in the desert. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday the 13th of November. This is ESPN Daily. Josh, thank you for joining me on ESPN Daily, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Josh Weinfuss has been covering the Arizona Cardinals for ESPN since 2013. I want to get maybe uncomfortably personal at the top here, if that's okay with you.
Do it.
How tall are you?
I'm 11 and three quarters.
See, I'm 5'10 and a half. And anyone who is within our height range, Josh, I think understands the value of that last fraction. I say all of this, Josh, to ask you, how tall is Kyler Murray really? Because this has been a thing. Look, I, as an Asian American, I see him as at the vanguard of Asian American athletes. But this last variable is essential for me to understand how much I can empathize with his plight.
I haven't taken a tape measure out to him like physically, but my guess is somewhere in the 5'9", 5'10 range legit. Like, he's definitely not taller than 5'10".
You're saying, like, Kyler, if he's really being honest with himself, he's going, like, 5'9 and a quarter, 5'9 and a half.
Somewhere in that range, for sure, yes.
So Murray's height has been this source of endless fascination, of consternation, Josh, for NFL fans who just aren't accustomed to a sub-5'10 athlete playing under center. And this Sunday, Murray and his 5-3 Cardinals have this huge matchup against the 7-2 Buffalo Bills, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I want to dive into Kyler some more here because of how good he's been, given that your city hasn't had a winner of any kind in a long time. So what's the atmosphere been like in Phoenix and the surrounding area around Kyler Murray and these Cardinals?
They're as excited as they've been here since the Carson Palmer days. And with Carson Palmer, they were going to NFC Championship games. And there's a lot of that same feel around the Valley right now. Granted, the Cardinals have lost some games that they shouldn't have. But generally speaking, with Kyler Murray under center, this fan base feels like they have an MVP candidate running their team.
Right, and that's very different, Josh, than how the fan base felt about Kyler Murray and head coach Cliff Kingsbury at the beginning of last year, is it not?
Let's back up to when Cliff Kingsbury got hired, January 2019. People were like, who is this guy? He was 35-40 at Texas Tech. People already started to build these notions of who he was, right? And it was, he can coach offensive football, but could he coach a whole football team? So then the video comes out that says he would draft Kyler Murray number one if he had the number one overall pick.
Kyler is, I mean, he's a freak, man. I've followed him since he was a sophomore in high school and just think the world of him and what he can do on a football field. And you know, I'd take him with the first pick of the draft if I could.
When Cliff Kingsbury's at Texas Tech, he recruited Kyler Murray as a sophomore at Allen High School in Texas. So he's known the kid since he was 15 years old. People started to really doubt whether the Cardinals were going to draft Kyler Murray. They're like, we don't need him. We have Josh Rosen. But after the combine, it really was clear to me that they were going to take Kyler Murray because Cliff Kingsbury wanted his quarterback to run this specific version of the air raid. Kyler has been running Cliff Kingsbury's version of the air raid since eighth grade, when his eighth grade football coach went to Lubbock to a coaching clinic, took the offense, brought it back to the high school, installed it. Long story short, people here did not think Kyler Murray was going to be the right quarterback. Fast forwarding to this week, people here love Kyler Murray. He's rookie of the year. He's leading all quarterbacks in rushing. The team is 5-3. There's a lot of hype around this team. They love it that he can go juke out a 6'3", 250-pound linebacker with a head and shoulder fake.
Touchdown, Kyler Murray, a 22-yard run. That defender is in multiple pieces at the 5-yard line as he tried to break.
And he can bomb it 80 yards to Christian Kirk for a touchdown.
Murray has got elite quickness. How about his deep ball? Looking for Kirk. He's got him! Touchdown! A 56-yard strike!
Josh, I am looking at, on my computer screen, a comparison, a statistical case that says that Kyler Murray, this season, through 8 games, is a better player than Lamar Jackson was during his MVP season of 2019. Just for those who are not as lucky as you, Josh, to watch Kyler Murray up close this often, what makes him so effective?
I kind of almost hate to say this as a journalist, but it's so much fun watching him play. You almost lose yourself in the moment when he scans the field, he does his progressions, and all of a sudden he tucks it, and you're like, okay, what's going to happen?
Quick snap, Murray keeps. Kyler Murray with a first down. Kyler Murray to the end zone, touchdown, Cardinals! What athletic ability, what desire. This is a star in the making.
And that's kind of the element that he brings to a game, is you don't know what's going to happen next with Kyler Murray. He was a first-round pick in both baseball and football. So I think that puts Kyler Murray in some third pantheon of great athletes just based on that alone. But when you see his baseball skills translate to the football field, you see he has this innate ability to slide.
Murray going to run again. And Kyler Murray with that baseball slide at the 30-yard line.
It's almost nerve-wracking because you see this 5'9", 5'10 guy squirreling around the field. And you know this guy's going to get his head knocked off at some point. But he's very good at avoiding hits. He can slide. It looks like he's sliding right into second on a stolen base.
You mentioned his baseball background, and it's important to note also that he had been drafted by the Oakland A's to play in Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball sent emissaries to try to convince him to play that sport instead of this one. He, to our benefit now, chose the NFL, but people doubted because of the height that maybe he was actually too small for this game. So how is his height actually factored into his play in the NFL so far?
It's interesting. This year, covering the NFL is very different because of the pandemic. We don't get locker room access. So it's very hard to kind of talk to these guys, you know, just shooting the bull, kind of off the record, kind of hearing the ins and outs of the game. But last year, one thing I heard a lot of was he could hide behind the offensive line because he was so small. Mm. And they started to use that to their advantage as the season went on, because he would tuck it and he would just creep up to the line and no one could see him. And then he would, boom, shoot through a hole. And it's like, you know, it's like a cannon going off. Like, pew, he's out of there. You know, the guys on defense are kind of like looking, like, where did he go? So that's where it works. We've seen where it doesn't work, where he gets quite a number of balls batted down.
Pass is batted down. And that'll be a question a lot of people will be wondering about. 5'10" quarterback having his passes knocked down.
He's not 6'6", throwing over guys. He's 5'10", trying to throw through guys. So obviously arm angle is a big thing, and he has a lot of different arm angles because of his baseball background, but that's kind of where it works and where it hurts him.
So that unique combination of abilities, it's been incredibly complex for defenses, for opposing teams to game plan for him, which you just reported on for ESPN.com in a great piece this week. So how have teams been prepping for the experience of a guy who may get shot out of a cannon that you didn't see, slash maybe has trouble seeing over the proverbial counter of linemen in the trenches?
A lot of teams are using non-quarterbacks to play him in practice. So teams have been using wide receivers, punt returners, non-traditional quarterbacks to replicate his speed, his evasiveness, his quickness. It's so hard to prepare for Kyler Murray compared to a Ben Roethlisberger, because you know very well what he can't do well and what he won't be doing well. With Kyler Murray, it's so hard to prepare a complete game plan because he can run and throw. I think Ron Rivera summed it up perfectly. He's the Washington football team head coach, when he said, quote, "He gives me anxiety."
It's
Tua is going to try to do it himself, pushing the pile forward, and it's a first down. This is Miami's first win in Arizona since 1996.
So I want to actually, for a second here, flashback to last weekend against the Dolphins, because that was a brutally painful loss. But it seems like Kyler wasn't the one who should necessarily be wearing all of that pain, given how he played. What's your evaluation of him in that game?
I thought he played as good of a game as he could have in what was probably one of the Cardinals' most important games of the season. He ran the ball for 100 yards. He threw the ball almost perfectly. He did, I thought, everything in his power to win this game within the limits of the offense, because Cliff Kingsbury should have given him the ball a couple of times where he didn't, and I think that ended up costing.
This to tie the game at 34 from 49 yards away, and Gonzalez is short! He did not get it there! And Kyler Murray can't believe it.
After the game, given the stakes, Josh, they could have had first place in the NFC West if they'd beaten the Dolphins. What did Kyler have to say about the team's performance afterwards?
Anyone who's covered Kyler or watched press conferences knows he's not always the easiest person to interview. He doesn't like some of the questions. He will laugh at some questions. His first question of the post-game press conference, he took 22 seconds to answer.
22 seconds of silence.
Silence.
Tyler, this is really a tough loss for you guys at home. How do you process this, and how do you move forward from here?
This one was one of those where he was trying to figure out the right thing to say to be careful, because you can tell he was just so mad and frustrated and angry.
Me personally, I wasn't really worried about a first place in division. I don't think anybody should be worried about that. We came out here and laid an egg.
Most of his answers were short. He didn't really want to talk about it, but he was not a happy camper, that is for sure.
We gotta be better.
Okay, up next. Why this Sunday could be make or break for the Cardinals' entire season, and why Coach Cliff Kingsbury is a lot more than just the most intimidatingly handsome coach in the NFL.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Josh, I want to dive in here on the Cardinals head coach, Cliff Kingsbury, because I think a lot of fans, like I am, are pretty fascinated by his general existence. He kind of looks like he stepped out of a GQ magazine. He apparently lives in this house that looks part Succession, part Parasite, also kind of part American Psycho. And he is incredibly wealthy and successful at all of 41 years old. So does that image I described of Cliff Kingsbury, does it match with reality?
Cliff Kingsbury isn't who people think he is. When he got hired, I did this deep dive into who he was. I talked to friends from his childhood, friends from college, people he worked with, and he likes to enjoy himself. He likes to, go out and party, but he doesn't do it as much as people think. Sure, he looks like Ryan Gosling. He has this magnificent house. We've seen pictures of him without his shirt on.
We have.
But he's a workaholic. He's at work by 4:30 in the morning. So he's up by 3:34. He's in bed as close to 9 o'clock as possible. He will literally cut off conversations with people when the clock strikes nine and turn his phone over so we can't see it. He'll mute his phone. And people that I talked to said they would literally be talking to him. It hits 9 o'clock wherever he is, and he just goes silent until morning. He doesn't talk on the phone a ton. He's a big texter. He has multiple phones. Like, this is the perfect job for him because he doesn't have to recruit. It's all football all the time.
So I want to get into Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech, because where he comes from is instructive for where he may be going. I mean, his quarterback tree is impressive. So he had Patrick Mahomes and Baker Mayfield at Tech before Baker obviously transfers to Oklahoma. He has Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M. He has Case Keenum at the University of Houston. And now Kyler, of course, is his greatest project. So how would you describe the personal relationship between these two distinct personalities you've now described for us?
Cliff Kingsbury, you know, you mentioned all the quarterbacks he coached, and I actually did another story on his offensive ingenuity a couple weeks ago, and I talked to a bunch of these guys, and a lot of them said the same thing. He gives his quarterbacks a lot of freedom. So while, you know, he has this authoritative figure, he goes to Kyler every week and says, what don't you like in the game plan? Or during practice, if Kyler says, this isn't working, Cliff will not hesitate and pull it out of the game plan. You know, he's not going to sit here and rule with an iron fist. He will let the quarterbacks have their say. And guys understand when they play for him, he will give them leeway. He will give them flexibility, but he will also take it away as soon as they take advantage of it. Cliff understands what's at stake. He understands that Kyler Murray is the face of the franchise. He understands that together they could win a lot of football games, but it's a matter of making sure that Kyler is being put in the right position. Because Kyler, especially last year, Kyler, he was overwhelmed at times. And it was, you know, he was baptized by fire. He was a rookie quarterback starting his first NFL game, playing all 16 games. So there was a lot of handholding last year, and that's eased up a little bit this year.
So those other players on the team that have helped ease him into what has been a pretty remarkably smooth running offense. DeAndre Hopkins, man, just like him landing at the doorstep of Cliff Kingsbury. Describe what those guys represent in terms of this scheme and this game plan.
They represent the playoffs. Let's be real. Like you put them together, this team can be very good for a very long time. And it's a matter of Cliff Kingsbury figuring out how to use DeAndre Hopkins. It's a matter of Kyler Murray figuring out how to play with him. And it hasn't happened yet. Once that happens, this team will be one of those teams that we're going to be talking about as long as Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury, and DeAndre Hopkins share a field. Now, people are going to say, well, they're 5-3. How can you say that? Take this into consideration. They didn't have OTAs together. They didn't have a mini camp together. They didn't have a preseason together. So really, we're 8 games into this NFL season for them. And I would say you have to count the first 4 of them as like their preseason. So they're still learning how to play together. This offense isn't something you just pick up overnight. And more NFL teams are running more air raid concepts every year, it seems like. So when DeAndre Hopkins got here, he said that he had played in something similar in college and then throughout his NFL career, that there are bits and pieces. But to put the whole puzzle together in a matter of a month of training camp, way easier said than done. So sure, the offense has looked phenomenal at times. It's also looked terrible at times. Last week, DeAndre Hopkins wasn't targeted in the entire first half. So I think that there is a learning curve between all three. But, you know, once they kind of figure each other out, then I think the NFL needs to watch out.
So this Sunday, given all of this backdrop that you paint, it is a truly momentous game. So the Buffalo Bills have won 3 straight behind Josh Allen, their own rising phenom quarterback who also mildly terrifies people. How can the Cardinals handle these Bills? What's their plan? What do they need to do this Sunday to make sure they're headed towards that postseason you described?
This might be the biggest game, because if you lose this game as Arizona, you're 5-4. You go on Thursday night up to Seattle. If you lose that, you're 5-5. At this point, we have no idea where the season's going. They win this game, you're 6-3. Next week's game could change a lot in terms of the projection of the rest of the season. But they need to get everyone involved, not named Kyler Murray, early. Because the more guys that they can get going in the first quarter and a half, that will make the defense spread out a little bit more. They'll have to start paying attention to DeAndre Hopkins if he has two or three catches in the first quarter. You know, if they start to utilize Larry Fitzgerald early, which they haven't a lot of this season, and if they start to utilize Christian Kirk, then all of a sudden the defense is going to have to start to decide, who do we cover? And that's when it's going to start to open up for Kyler Murray. Now, the flip side of that is, maybe Cliff Kingsbury calls two or three designed runs in the first drive and makes the Bills pack the box, and that opens up everything one-on-one coverage, and then Kyler can sit in the pocket untouched, basically flat-footed, as he's been known to do this season, because the offensive line's been playing pretty good, and he can just pick him apart from back there. So as tough as Kyler Murray is to defend, Cliff Kingsbury has so many options offensively because of all the weapons that they have.
So let's take the longer view here and let's get hot takey and hypothetical. The Cardinals win this game, let's say, against the Bills. They then get the Seahawks next week in that rematch that will probably decide who's going to be in first place in the division. Can the Cardinals actually win this division outright, the NFC West, and make a run into the playoffs that will put an end to the uncomfortable 22-second silences?
In one word, yes. Do I think that they sweep the Seahawks? No. But 2020 has been a weird year, right? If they beat the Seahawks, very possible Thursday night, short week, a lot of adrenaline, a lot of emotion. If they win that game, I think they win the West. And I think they're sitting pretty for, you know, not just an opening round playoff game, but we could be talking about them late into January.
Josh, my 5'11" and 3/4-inch brother, thank you for joining us on ESPN Daily.
I appreciate it, Pablo. Thanks for having me.
All right, coming up, one Boston-based Hall of Famer joins me to say goodbye to another.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. No NBA team has won more championships than the Boston Celtics, who have 17 banners hanging in their rafters. An NBA Hall of Famer, Tommy Heinsohn, was there for every single one of them. Heinsohn personally won 10 titles, 8 as a Hall of Fame forward, 2 as a coach, and he called the other 7 courtside as the team's famously passionate color commentator. Heinsohn died this week at age 86, and none other than my friend Bob Ryan, an NBA Hall of Famer himself for his work with the Boston Globe, weighed in with the ultimate epitaph. Quote, "No one bled green more than Tom Heinsohn," end quote. Not Red Auerbach, not Bill Russell, not Larry Bird. Tom Heinsohn. So I called up Bob to get his personal remembrance of his friend.
In October of 1969, 2 days before the opening night of that season, I was given the Celtic beat as a 23-year-old kid. And I had had no exhibition games. I hadn't seen them play. I hadn't met Tommy yet. My first encounter would have been on opening night, interestingly enough, against the Cincinnati Royals, coached by none other than Bob Cousy in his NBA coaching debut. So here were these old buddies. Now they were opposing coaches, each in his first NBA coaching job. Tommy had never coached a day of anything, including youth basketball, in his life when he was given that job. So that week is when I met Tommy, and I got to know him quite well over the next 7 years until I got off the beat.
I came to know him as this iconic hometown broadcaster in Boston, but he was obviously so much more than that.
Loud, bombastic at times, passionate, authoritative, confident, boastful at times. I mean, but a bright man. The thing is, he's a man of his time. He came into the NBA at a time when everybody, with one or two notable exceptions, everybody in his time was a four-year college graduate. And he emerged as an educated human being who could have made a living outside of basketball easily. He also had another thing going for him, which was that he was an artist. He had a capacity to draw and paint, and it was a real avocation of his. So he was a worldly man who happened to love basketball above all. But believe me, he could have been successful a lot of things. And he was a successful artist. I'm proud to say that we have a Heinsohn in our living room, and that was always been a source of great pleasure for us.
Wait. So this painting by Tommy Heinsohn that hangs in your living room still today, Bob, what's the painting of?
It is a picture. It's called Snowy Winter Evening, and it's simply a depiction of a winter scene, a couple cottages, if you will, small houses in a pastoral winter scene. Pablo actually went on vacations more than once to Europe solely for the purpose of finding things to paint. And he would set up his easel and his palette and looking outside his hotel room or sitting on the riverbank, whatever it might be, and paint. One of his great traits was his wonderful command of the English language. He liked to spin phrases. He liked to describe things. And he had one particularly favorite word that he used, and the word was inculcate. He loved that word. And it's been over 45 years, but I never forgot that. And I kind of knew that when the time would come for me to memorialize Tommy, that I would be emphasizing his use of the word inculcate.
You know, I don't want to skip over his artistry on the court as well, Bob, as a player and a coach. As a basketball historical figure, how towering was he in terms of his achievements?
He went to Holy Cross at a time when they were really riding high in basketball. Cousy had graduated in 1950, and they did win the national championship in 1947. So there was a tradition at Holy Cross. They won the NIT while he was there, which was very important in those days, more important than the NCAA tournament still in the 50s. And so they were really good. He was a first-round draft pick, and he spent 9 years in the league. He was four-time second-team NBA, the first-team forwards in those four particular years, were Elgin Baylor and Bob Pettit, all-time great players. So he was among the handful of greatest forwards in the league for his period of time. He led the team in scoring four times. And his most notable game of his career was actually played in his rookie year in Game 7 of the 1957 NBA Finals against the St. Louis Hawks, a 125-123 double overtime game. Tommy Heinsohn had 37 points and 23 rebounds. And he and Russell had 19 points and 32 rebounds. The two kids, quote-unquote, carried them to that championship. Now, his style, Pablo, is obsolete. You don't see players that feature a line drive jump shot, A, and a running hook from the corner, B. That was his trademark shot. It's just unimaginable today. But he was very good at it. Also, was an excellent offensive rebounder. He scored, he's a solid scorer, 18, 19, 20 points a game in his peak. But it's a style of play that you can't imagine today.
I like to imagine Stephen A. Smith yelling about Tommy Heinsohn as he does that, and he is shooting corner hook shots. My God.
Running corner hook shots.
Bob Ryan, thank you for inculcating in me an appreciation for basketball history.
Totally welcome.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, happy early birthday, Eve, Chris Tuminello, happy belated birthday to you, Chris, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Garrett Lang, Max Brodsky, John Fish, Matt McCormick, and Troy Farkas. I'll talk to you Monday.